The whites want to bring tourists here, Jamie said. In his own ears, his voice sounded as if he were 9 years old. Nah, they can't get here. Not here. That's right, Jamie said, feeling relieved. This village doesn't exist anymore, does it? Al grinned at him, dentures white and even in his weathered-seamed face. You don't get it, do you, grandson? They can't come here because this village don't exist yet. Dithonium Chasma, the graveyard. 15 people, Jamie thought as he stared at his computer display. 15 men and women. Who's going to stay? Who'd want to stay under these conditions? I can't ask VJ to risk it, he told himself. She'd want to stay with me, but it's not fair for me to keep her here. But I can't send her away, either. I promised her we'd be together, whatever happened. If I stay, she stays. She won't want to leave, not without me. And I've got to stay here. I've got to. His pocket phone buzzed. Flicking it open, he saw Billy Greycloud's face in the tiny screen. The kid was outside at the dig, clear nanofabric bubble over his head.
Dr. W., we've cleared one grave. You ought to see it before they start taking the bones out.
Right, said Jamie. I'll be there in a minute. He jumped up from his chair so fast he banged a knee against the wobbly folding table and nearly knocked his laptop to the floor. Stuffing the phone back into his shirt pocket, Jamie rushed to the suit lockers by the main airlock hatch and hurriedly pulled on a nanosuit.
Not so fast, please.
Jamie looked up and saw the diminutive Kristen Dvorak, one of the astronauts.
I am safety officer today, she said in her Middle European accent. You rush too much, you kill yourself.
Jamie smiled sheepishly. I know, it's just... Kristen held up a finger.
I check you out. Make sure you're sealed up good.
He stood there like a suspect in a police shakedown while she walked all around him, checking his suit seals, his life support backpack, and their connections to the suit's metal collar.
Okay, she said, her ballerina slim face utterly serious. Now pull up hood and inflate it.
Jamie did as he was told. Then she checked the transmission from the radio clip to his ear. At last, Kristen smiled and said,
You are clear for excursion. Have a pleasant day.
Jamie grinned at her and ducked through the airlock hatch. Once outside, he loped across the stony ground to the edge of the excavation and down the ramp to its bottom. A small crowd was standing off at the far side of the pit where the cemetery lay. Jamie couldn't see Carlton among them.
Dr. W.,
Greycloud's voice,
come and see this.
Jamie made his way along the central street of the long-buried village, ancient building foundations dark and low against the reddish ground on either side of him. Nobody was working among them, he saw. They're all at the graveyard.
We waited for you, Jamie, said Carter Carlton.
Jamie was surprised to see him in a nanosuit instead of his usual hard shell.
I'm sorry if I held you up, he said, panting a little from his trotting.
Carlton seemed strangely subdued.
He's waited 65 million years. A few more minutes won't bother him.
There were 8 men and women standing at the edge of the grave, Billy Greycloud among them. Jamie was surprised to see Mo Zerowal, too. What's a number cruncher from Cellini doing out here, he asked himself. He must have volunteered. Jamie looked down into the uncovered grave. It was filled with odd-looking bones, crushed by the weight of eons, flattened, distorted. But he thought he could make out what looked like a spine. And maybe those were limbs.
6 of them?
That's a Martian, he whispered.
That's a Martian, Carlton replied, his voice also hushed, choked.
And more. Jamie glanced at the anthropologist, then looked back into the grave. Pointing, Carlton said,
Those look like beads, don't you think? And that little object there might have been a small vase or a cup of some sort.
It's hard to tell, said Jamie.
It's all been flattened by the overburden, Carlton said, still half whispering. It's going to take some time to put it all together and find out how they were actually built.
6 legs? Jamie asked. Carlton nodded inside his bubble helmet.
At least. 2 of them end in grasping appendages. Hands, see?
Hard to tell, Jamie repeated.
Greycloud spoke up.
They must have been built close to the ground, like turtles. Not necessarily, said Carlton. The skeleton's been flattened by the weight of 30 meters of soil pressing down on it. Someone else made a comment, and Carlton answered. But Jamie stared into the grave and saw at last the Martians that he had dreamed about. They didn't look human at all, but they had legs and arms and hands, eyes and ears. They spoke a language and wrote pictographs and built this village and the shrine high up on the canyon wall. They had minds. We could have communicated with them if only... Carlton sank to his knees and bent to reach into the grave. Careful, one of the group gasped. I know, said Carlton, leaning over. His gloved fingers reached for the flattened, odd-shaped bone at one end of the skeleton. It was only slightly larger than his hand, mottled rusty gray, hard-looking. Holding it up in his hands like a kneeling worshipper raising a holy grail, Carlton said, This is a cranium. Got to be. The brain case isn't all that big. Are those eye sockets? They look straight ahead. Binocular vision. They saw things in depth. Three-dimensional vision, just like us. Resting back on his haunches, Carlton turned the fossil around in his hands. Ha! See this? He pointed with his free hand. Jamie saw a hole in the back of the skull. Forum and magnum. I'll bet my last breath on it, Carlton said in a strangely hushed, almost worshipful voice. This is where the spinal cord went through the cranium to connect with the brain. If its brain was in its cranium, one of the biologists said. Ignoring the remark, Carlton went on. It must have been four-legged. Or six. It held its body horizontal to the ground. It didn't stand upright the way we do. Jamie thought that was a lot to assume in the first 5 minutes of examination, but he said nothing. This was Carlton's moment, and he was entitled to his surmises. Who knows, Jamie asked himself. He might even be right. Carlton slapped his gloved hands together, startling Jamie out of his musings. All right, he said, his voice loud and commanding now. We start removing the bones, one piece at a time. I want a complete photographic record. Every clod, every molecule we remove has got to be recorded down to the nanometer. This is history, people. Let's get to work. And Jamie heard his grandfather's enigmatic words. This village don't exist yet. Tithonium Base. The Translation. Jamie helped Carlton and his team to tenderly lift the fossilized bones out of the grave, together with the beads and shards of pottery that lay with the body, and carry them inside the dome. Under Carlton's exacting direction, they laid everything on the big stereo table in exactly the same positions as they had been in the grave. Two technicians spent the next hour taking stereo photographs of the remains, while Carlton's people gathered in the cafeteria to relax after a long, exciting, tension-filled day. Jamie went with them. Well, they buried their dead, all right, said Alonzo Jenkins as he lounged back in a cafeteria chair, legs stretched out and a plastic glass of fruit juice in his hand. With trinkets, added Shirley McIntyre, one of the medical technicians who had volunteered to help at the dig. She was in her mid-twenties and had dropped out of astronaut training in Britain to join the medical team on Mars. Tall, lean, and muscular, she had been pursued by several of the men, but stayed aloof from them all.
They must have believed in an afterlife, Billy Greycloud said softly.
Eyebrows went up. People looked surprised that Greycloud would speak up. Jamie smiled at the young man and said, So they must have had some form of religion. Everyone nodded. I wonder how much they were like us, murmured one of the men. Or we're like them. Not physically, said Jamie. We don't look anything alike. But mentally?
Spiritually.
They lived in villages, Jamie said, ticking off points on his fingers. They had a rudimentary form of writing. They buried their dead.
With beads and pottery, McIntyre interjected.
Like Billy said, they believed in an afterlife, said Jenkins. So they must have had some kind of religion. That's the basis for religion, sure enough. They looked up to see Carter Carlton walking toward them from the juice dispensers, a glass in his hand, a happy smile on his handsome face. The promise of life beyond death,